Hey, this is In My Humble Opinion with Chaz Douglas. I got a very special guest. I got Jordan Nobles on today, man. Thanks for coming on, Jordan.
Appreciate you for having me, man. It's a pleasure.
Man, hey, no problem. Hey, so one thing I wanted to, I want to start off with this, man, is, it's not a lot of brother, you go to the church, man, or in, mm-hmm. and a lot of churches is a lot more women in the church than men. And right. So, man, I just wanted to, like, give you your flowers and just say, man, I respect that, how faithful you are, man. You come to, you're at the men's, the stages of manhood, mm-hmm. Transition Sunday, man. And just, man, and I know you busy with your business and also with coaching. So, man, I do know that you're sacrificing doing that, man. So I want to, just give you your credit for that.
Man, I appreciate that, man. It's all glory to God. And I really credit, the way I was brought up and the way I was raised. My parents kept me in the church almost 7 days out the week.
Okay.
When I was younger. So, going to church was a habit that was built, mm-hmm. and something that I've continue to do throughout my adulthood is just, going back to church. And I really have like a family there,
Yeah,
I have a village of people that helped raise me. And they seen me grow since I was since I was born, really.
Okay.
I was one of the kids. I was in the nursery.
Okay.
At the church.
So you've been in C-Type pretty much your whole life?
My whole life.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
My parents were members before I was even born.
Okay.
So,
okay.
My whole family, even my siblings, we've all been, through and through the church, and some of my closest relationships or friends and just people have been through the church.
Yeah.
So, really have a lot of extended family there, and yeah, that's why I'm so comfortable there, because I'm at home.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say, I've been there since November 16th, so it hasn't been 8 years yet. But mm-hmm. I'm pretty faithful. I'm active, so I can see how it can be like that over. You've been there, pretty much your whole life.
Right.
Just my 7 years of being there is like, man, I really love the people and the fellowship with our members at C-Tab.
Yeah, man, I think it's a very, very special place. It's obviously a place that I hold like near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But from your perspective as well, like you see it.
Yeah.
And it's really a place where people are allowed to be themselves,
mm-hmm.
and come together and kind of like rely on one another. We can console each other. We can comfort each other. And we can also, give thanks and honor to God in a comfortable setting. And I think that's very important.
Yeah. Hey, so Jordan, man, a few reasons why I wanted you on, man. Like, I know, you just having the experience that you have. Like, man, I'm a big basketball guy. Man, mm-hmm. I love basketball. I used to play, I've been playing since I was 7.
Okay.
And so, man, like, in basketball, your thing, man, because you played overseas. You played professionally, right?
Yeah. I played professionally overseas in Portugal.
Okay.
And that was an amazing experience, man. That was a life-changing experience, being able to go play basketball, across the world and everything. So that was pretty cool.
When did you feel like you were special? Like, you knew that you were special and you was going to do something. You were going to be like, man, I think I can, be very good with this. When was that moment for you where you felt like, hey, I think I'm good. And I can play, I'm going to play beyond, high school, or I'm going to play, I'm going to be a standout high school player. I'm going to play in college. When was that moment for you?
Wow, that's a good question. I would honestly say probably the summer going into my junior year of high school. So a little background, like I've always been a tall kid.
Mm-hmm.
People have always, no matter what age I've been, 10, 11, 12, I've always been the tallest kid in my grade.
Mm-hmm.
So, people always say, oh, you're going to be a basketball player when you grow up, or, you're going to be really tall, or, everything like that. And I always had skill too. Okay. I always had, you know, I stayed around the game. Like, I watched basketball like night and day. Like, you know, a lot of kids was watching cartoons and stuff, but I was watching like SportsCenter, you know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, I watch cartoons too, but you know, SportsCenter and basketball games was in the heavy rotation, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel like the summer in between my sophomore and junior year, you know, I was about.
So you said you going to your junior year, you saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Going into my junior year of high school. So I had broke my ankle a week before my sophomore year started for basketball. So I was out almost the entire year. I only played the last five games of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you know, I was hurt. I was so sick. I got hurt. I was like, because I really thought, you know, my sophomore year was going to be amazing. I put in a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
At the school and with my teammates, and then I just got injured. So it was kind of unfortunate. But, you know, when I was coming back on the road to recovery, I was kind of like hesitant about my ankle because I hadn't played on it. You know, I was still trying to strengthen it back up. And it was like a mental hurdle that I had to get over. And I feel like I couldn't do that in that short span of five games during the season.
Mm-hmm.
At summertime, when I got with my AU program, I feel like that's when my confidence in my ankle and my game really, like, came out.
Okay.
I can see, like, even the things that I was picking up on just watching practice throughout the season when I was hurt and I couldn't play. You know, a lot of those things that I was watching, like, I just naturally started to do.
Okay.
You know, I was picking up on the game and my IQ was increasing from the time I was sitting out. And then it was just a mental hurdle of getting over like that injury of my ankle and trusting that my ankle had been strengthened again and back to normal and even, you know, stronger than what it was. So once I got over that hurdle, man, I really just took off and I saw my game develop and it was just like night and day. Like I felt like I had grown as a basketball player and as a person, just getting over that that tough, you know. And I came in, I had a great summer that summer, and then I came in my junior year and I really like dominated, and that kind of like set the tone for the rest of my high school career.
Okay. Now where did you play at Country Day too, or where did you?
No, I didn't. Yeah, so I went to Canton High School.
Okay.
I'm in Canton, Michigan. So my brother went to Country Day.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's a 7-year. He's 7 years older than me.
Okay.
So at that time when he was at Country Day, we were living in Oak Park.
Okay. But, okay.
You know, by the time I was in high school, we was in Canton.
Okay.
So I went to Canton High School and yeah, that's my school, man. I love that school for a lot of reasons. It's I tell you, man, when I first got to Canton, when I first moved to Canton, it was different.
Okay.
Because you know, coming from Oak Park, I lived in Belleville for a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of schools and a lot of the environments I have been in were predominantly Black.
Okay.
So I seen a lot of people like myself and everything like that. When I moved to Canton, I remember first day I went to Canton Public Schools. And I remember being like one of two Black people in the class.
Oh, okay.
And it was a complete shock to me, bro. it was like a complete shock. I remember just feeling kind of like, and this is how it's how like naive I was, because it really wasn't anything wrong, but it was just like a shock to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Because you used to being, you know, I get it. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. So I remember my first day coming back home from school that day, I remember crying to my mom, like, please get me out of here. Like, please get me out. I want to go back where I'm comfortable. I want to be with my friends. Like, I don't know nobody here. Like, I'm already standing out because I'm tall. And I was wearing glasses. Like, I came in there with an Allen Iverson jersey on and I was wearing button-ups. So I'm like, come on, man. I'm standing out. But as time, like, time got better. I ended up making a lot of friends and feeling more comfortable. And I made friends from different like ethnicities and different backgrounds and walks of life. And I really credit like my parents for putting me in that environment, because it really helped me to, like, where now I can talk to anybody.
Yeah. You know? Now, hey, that's a good point. Because yeah. I was in a position like that, a similar position like that. Like, we, you know, I grew up, you know, I lived, grew up Saginaw. And okay. Well, I went to Bridgeport Schools. Now, it's a diverse school.
Yeah.
But this particular year, I was in sixth grade. This particular year, I was like, it was me and another black kid in the class. Like, this is the first time I was in the class where I didn't have any friends, or, you know, I'm the only black, you know, it's only two of us, and I'm not really cool with that person. But right. I get where you're coming from, because it did make me see another side of the world, you know, of America, because I kind of got into what they listen to. You know, I would listen to their music. I'm like, you know what? NSYNC, not that bad. Backstreet Boys, right, not that bad. So I kind of got into, you know, I kind of got into that. So I think it does make it, I think it's a good experience, because, like what you said, Jordan, you can talk to anybody now. Because you've been in those rooms.
Exactly. So, and I feel comfortable. And, you know, I think I joke with a lot of people. Like, I say, like, obviously basketball and sports is a good, like, connector of cities and different backgrounds and everything. But also, like, music is a good connector.
Yeah.
You know, food is a great connector.
Yeah.
I love food. Trying, you know, I love, like, trying different foods. I love my Mediterranean food. I love my Indian food. Know all that, so, like, and I learned a lot from having friends from different ethnicities. Like, I got white friends, I got Indian friends, I got Middle Eastern, I got, you know, I got all types of friends everywhere. So, yeah, I learned a lot from them, and I pick up on them. So, yeah.
Now you played at Canton High School. Who did you? What AAU team did you play with?
So at first, I was playing on a team that my dad had created.
Oh, okay.
We were actually practicing at the church, at the Family Life Center.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, pastor, he allowed us to practice there and hold our practices there. So, I think from my freshman year of high school to about my junior year going into my senior year, I was with my dad and my brother, and they would coach our AU team. It was called the Michigan Titans.
Oh, okay, okay.
And we did some good things, man. We won the state championship to go down to the Nationals down in Orlando at the ESPN World Ride of Sports.
I know that's big.
Yeah, that was that same summer that I was talking about when I was coming off my injury.
Oh, okay, okay.
That was a huge summer, like, just enabled, you know, going to win states and go to Nationals. And then I actually played up, too. So I was playing up at age group. I was playing with kids going into their senior year when I was going into my junior year.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So what happened was, you know, that next summer, you know, a lot of those kids were graduating and going to college when I was going into my senior year of high school. And at that time, my dad, you know, he didn't want to build a whole new team around me. So we found a AU program, a trusted source.
Okay.
And I ended up playing my last year at AU with the Michigan Warriors.
Okay, okay.
They're located out in, like, Belleville, that area.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and that was a great experience, too.
When you went to Nationals, can you remember any, like, guys that went on to, like, play big, you know, like, you know, big D1 or even in the NBA?
Yeah, for sure. And I don't remember when I went to Nationals with my dad and that team, because at that time I was maybe like 15, 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know anything about rankings
anything
like that. I probably did play against those guys, but I didn't even know who they were.
Oh, okay.
Just hooping, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But going into my senior year with the other team, with the Michigan Warriors, I remember going to, we played in this tournament called NY to LA.
Okay.
Out in Milwaukee in Wisconsin, and it's like a national tournament, a lot of teams from different areas coming in. And I remember playing against Kevon Looney.
Okay
plays with Golden State now. The thing about Kevon Looney in high school, like, he man, his game was so crazy. Like, when I tell you, like, he was playing like Kevin Durant.
Really?
Yeah. And you would never think that.
No, because he's just inside. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess what happened with him, he had a lot of injuries early in his NBA career and college when he went to college. And it kind of changed his game.
Okay.
Those injuries. But obviously, he made the best of it. He's a multiple NBA champion. And he's part of that core of the Golden State Warriors. But, when he was in high school, man, he was a problem. Yeah. He was a problem. Like, he gave it to you however you wanted it, like a problem. And then I remember playing against Miles Turner. He plays for the Pacers.
Okay,
Kelly Oubre. A couple other guys. Trey Jefferson. I know Trey didn't make it to the league, but Trey was a monster too.
Yeah.
But
you know what? That show you how, like, you know, I listened to the Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Yeah. There's levels to this, to basketball. Yeah. Like, because you will have somebody, and we're going to get into that a little later, but you will have somebody who is at the end of the bench at, you know, we'll just say at a D1 at Michigan State. But they go to anywhere. They go and just kill it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like you go to the G League. You know, if a guy at the G League, they go – hey, put them in college or put them, you know, at Lifetime Fitness and see what they won't do.
Yeah. And that's so true. And I remember my first experience with that. I was at an open gym my senior year of high school. I was at an open gym at Oakland University. And they had invited a couple of Pistons players to come to the gym. And these guys weren't, you know, they weren't the noticeable Piston players. They're like, you know, guys who barely get in the game.
Yeah.
One of the guys' name was Jonas Jerecko. I don't know if you remember him. But he was there and like he dominated. And it was easy for him.
Yeah.
Bro, like this is nuts. Like how does he not play in the league?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How did I come off the bench? And it's like, it is, like you just said, it's levels, bro. Like
it's levels, man.
Those guys who sit on the bench, they don't just, you know, they sit on the bench and collecting their paycheck, but they'll go to any gym in America and show up.
Yep.
Like
it's levels, man. It's levels. And the thing is, that don't even mean, like, if he's dominating somebody, that don't mean that person that he's dominating is not good. They just, it's just different levels.
Yeah, and it make you go harder, though, because, like, it's like, if this guy can't play in the league or if this guy can't get, you know, burned in the league, then I know I got to step my game up. Mm-hmm. And I know I got to, you know, and, you know, I remember, I can't remember, I know we had a conversation after the run was done. He was just talking to all of us, giving us some advice and pointers and stuff like that. But, you know, just seeing his work ethic and he didn't care if we was in high school, college. Once we was on the court, we was all the same. And he's going out. So that's what I took to heart, is just watching him work and just the competitive nature that he had.
Yeah. What was their recruiting process like for you?
So the recruiting process for me started in that same summer coming off that injury. Like I said, I had a really good summer showing on AU circuit, and I started to get some interest from like some Division IIs and NAIAs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Grand Valley, Saginaw Valley, Davenport, Ferris State, A-State, a lot of those schools started to get interested. And then after my junior year of high school, going into my senior year, I had a really good summer as well with the Michigan Warriors. And it's funny how, like, because from that Warriors team, about six of us went Division I.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of coaches, they were coming to look at one person, and then they'll see another person.
Mm.
And then even if they couldn't get that guy, they're telling other coaches, you know? So it's like a connect, like a web.
Mm-hmm.
My recruiting profile started to build. And you know, I was hearing about more coaches or more schools. The first Division I offer I got was from UAD.
Okay.
So that was pretty good. And then when I got that one, they just started coming in. So, you know, Oakland, Eastern, Central, Western, a couple of schools out of state like Loyola, Chicago, Ball State, Toledo, all like the MAC, you know, MAC schools and kind of like mid-major schools. But yeah, man, that was, it was awesome, and it was kind of like exhausting at the same time. Because, I mean, it was just like your phone is constantly blowing up. And at 17, 18 years old, you don't really know how to handle that. But luckily, you know, I had my older brother who'd been through the same process. So he was kind of like my guide through all of that. So, I, you know, I thank God that I have him to rely on. He kind of walked the same walk that I had, and was really there to help me through, to navigate it, to navigate through everything.
Me and him, we just were messaging each other.
He said he's gonna
come on too. What school, like, I know you end up going to Eastern. What school like did you seriously consider going to over Eastern?
Honestly, because I was debating if I wanted to stay in state or not. Loyola Chicago was a destination that I thought would have been pretty cool. And also, what was it? If I can remember correctly, I think it was Western. And also UAD, because I kind of showed some loyalty because they were the first school to kind of like give me a chance or, you know, scholarship. So I was thinking about those schools. But I think at the end, Eastern was the right choice for me. You know, when you get on these calls with these coaches, a lot of them, you know, they try to like sweet talk you. You know, it's kind of like almost like being on like the dating scene or something. Like they telling you everything you want to hear, like, oh, you're going to do this and you're going to come in and play right away and everything like that. When I got recruited by Eastern, the assistant coach who recruited me there, he had already knew about me because his daughter went to the same high school as me. So he had kind of already been watching before, you know, he really introduced himself. You know, he's asking people around the school who I was, trying to see what my character was and everything like that. He heard good things about me. So then he had, you know, formally introduced himself. And when he did that, it was kind of informal in a way, because he kind of like, I remember I was getting out of a workout at high school and he was in a parking lot. Like, I'm walking to my parents' car or whatever, parking lot. And he like stopped me and we talked for like 30, 40 minutes, but we never talked about basketball.
What y'all talking about?
We talked about just family. We talked about, you know, my future and things that I want to get done, things what I want to, you know, accomplish in life. Talked about my grades. We just talked about everything. And his name is Coach White. Coach White. And, you know, I think that was most important to me, because he didn't even mention basketball to me. He just wanted to see who I was. And that hit home for me. And then we talked about our faith too, because he's a believer as well. And that stuck with me. Like, that was huge for me too. Because I know, you know, I was going to college, I was going to be away from my family, and I knew, like, one, he was going to have my back regardless. He was also going to, you know, he wasn't going to sugarcoat anything with me. He wasn't going to make any false promises or anything like that. He told me right off the bat it was going to have to be work, and that's what's going. And I wasn't, you know, I'm not shying away from that. You know, but also I knew like he was going to keep me in line, you know, because, you know, college comes with a lot of different distractions and everything like that. But he was also going to be there and, you know, kind of like in my corner, you know, he never like tried to hide anything. He told me exactly what it was, exactly what everything was. So I really appreciated his authenticity.
When you went to transitioning from high school to, you know, you didn't just go to, you know, JUCO, which, you know, like I said, it's different levels. JUCO players can hoop too. You went to D1. Like, what was that transition? Like, what were some of the challenges that you had going from high school to D1? And then how did you overcome those challenges?
Man. So from an athletic standpoint, man, it's a whole nother level.
Okay.
It's a whole nother level because, you know, in high school, I'm not going to lie, in high school, I could get away with not, I could get away with not working as hard.
Yeah.
I was more talented than what was around me.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, sometimes I didn't have to try as hard to still get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In college, oh my goodness. It was a rude awakening.
Okay.
Because college, especially at D1 at any level of college, you know, those, your teammates are the best. Were everybody who was at Eastern was the best player at their high school.
Yeah.
But you're going against the best from the previous level, you
mm-hmm.
know? And when you go up a level, some of the things that you got away with, you can't get away with anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got to elevate. And there's a period of time where you're figuring out how to elevate, or you're figuring out how to like grow, mm-hmm. you know, and it's sometimes uncomfortable. It's sometimes painful. And sometimes you like, dang, is it really worth it? You know, mm-hmm. like it's hard. It's really hard. Yeah. It's not for everyone, you know, yeah. Not everyone can do that. But like, for example, I think my first week of summer workouts with Eastern, was just crazy, doing 2-a-days, 3-a-days, you know, we had summer classes as well. So, you know, we'd have class at 8 a.m, from 9, go over to the gym, do a lift. From the lift, we're doing conditioning, and conditioning be outside on the football field. It's 90 degrees outside.
Yeah.
We're running stadiums. We're running, you know, sprints on the football field, everything like that. We go back, we have, you know, positional workouts. Then we have a team practice, and then everybody wants to play basketball at the night, do a little open run, and you repeat that the whole summer.
Mm.
And it's just that first week I came back home. I came back home because we had a little break on the weekend. I came back home and I couldn't sit on the couch. Like everything was hurting. Like my legs was hurting. I was dragging them on the floor. I couldn't lift my arms above my head. Like it was just painful. But, you know, as the summer went on, I was getting stronger. I was getting faster.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming more competitive because, you know, I'm 18 years old going against 22-year-old, 23-year-old men.
Yeah.
They're not taking it easy. Mm-hmm. Like they're punishing and you know, punishing me. And they don't want me, you know, they don't want a freshman to come in and take their spot. They're trying to show me what it is, you know?
Yeah.
So that's something that I will always respect from my upperclassmen that I had. Like they kept it real with me on and off the court.
Mm-hmm.
Like they showed me what it was, they showed me what it wasn't. And that's something that I tried to emulate when I was in there in the same shoes as them when I was an upperclassman with incoming freshmen coming in and stuff like that. So,
So you feel like you overcame that just by like just putting in the work then, right?
For sure. Putting in the work. And it wasn't easy. It's a lot of like down days, a lot of times where you overthinking, or a lot of times where you just can't get right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you just gotta trust in the work that you're doing, that you know you're getting better each and every day.
Yeah.
And it's gonna click at one point where you're gonna feel that the work that you're doing is going somewhere. And, you know, sometimes it's different for everybody. Like sometimes the work that you put in shows up immediately, and mm-hmm. some for other people, it doesn't show up until, you know, a couple months later or even the next season, you know. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think I was one of those guys where, because I redshirted my first year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I redshirted my first year, so I didn't even play my first year of college. I practiced and everything. I went to all the games, but I never played. And, you know, a lot of people can see that as like a failure. And for a moment, I felt like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the reassurance from my coaches and teammates, and, you know, I had a lot of people in the basketball world who've been through the same similar mm-hmm. thing that I did, you know. And even my coach, my head coach, told me, he was like, I'm going to redshirt you this year because we got three upperclassmen that play the same position as you.
Oh, okay.
And if you were to play, you're not going to play. So I don't want to waste this year of you playing and waste 1 year of eligibility for you just to only play maybe 3-5 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So we might as well just use this year to get stronger, learn the game through practices and everything like that. And next year, you have more room to grow, you know?
Yeah. What are the reasons, you know, other than that? Like, because I know, you know, a lot of people redshirt that first year. What are some of the reasons that a freshman will redshirt their first year?
So it can be, you know, if someone gets hurt during the preseason, then if it's like really bad injury or something like that, instead of like rushing to come back and you only play 10 games that season and you still lose the year of eligibility because you played in those games.
Oh, okay.
It's smarter for you to just sit out the whole year, get healthy, and then you come back that next year and you still have all 4 years of your eligibility. Another reason is grades.
Okay. You know,
if you're not going to be eligible to play, then you need to use this year to get your grades right so you can be eligible, so you won't lose a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then other situations where, like me, it was like positioning. I had three seniors ahead of me in the same position that I played. And, you know, they were all experienced and ready to go. And frankly, I wasn't ready to go coming straight in. You know, I needed development to play at that level.
Yeah.
And that was the weight room. That was, you know, getting stronger on the court, getting more competitive. Getting more confident in myself. That was a big thing too. And that had to be, there had to be time spent and repetition and mm-hmm. you know, drilling into my mindset and my work ethic, you know?
Yeah.
So, but that all took time. Yeah. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I went to Eastern, graduated from Eastern.
Okay.
And so, you know, just being there, man, I know, like, the girls are after, you know, the athletes. So, man, like, I was curious to know, like, how can you determine, how did some of your teammates or just, you know, athletes that you know determine this woman, like, really likes me for me, you know, ooh. Compared to, hey, they think that I'm going to go pro and they just trying to just – be with me because they know what I might get, you know,
right.
when I, you know, make this money.
Yeah, man, that's a good question. And it's something that me as a single man still, mm-hmm. I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
I'm still like determine that, you know? And I feel like right now, me being 28 years old, I have a lot more discernment than what I had at 18.
Yeah.
I had a lot more discernment than what I had back then. Because honestly, I mean, you don't know, mm-hmm. you know, you don't know at that age and everything is so like new and it feels like you have a sense of freedom in college. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, athletes, I would be lying if I said we didn't get special privileges.
Yeah.
We get a ton of special privileges, mm-hmm. you know, on and off the court. So it can be very, like, deceiving. It can be very tricky to work around and to navigate. But I would say, like, that's why I'm so happy. You know, I'm so thankful that I had the background that I have, mm-hmm. you know, have strong parents, and I know what love looks like because my parents have been married for almost 35 years now.
Yeah.
You know, even my brother, you know, he had kids early and he got married early.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen what that looks like, and I, you know, up close and personal.
Yeah.
And then even seeing, like, you know, going to church and seeing all these families that have helped grow me. I've seen, you know, husbands and wives love each other.
Yeah,
I see it, you know, with Pastor Mormon and Sister Loretta Mormon. I see them. Yeah. I saw them my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what that looks like, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not to say that I never messed up. I messed up.
Yeah.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
but I do have an understanding of what real love looks like.
Mm-hmm. And
that's something that, you know, I'm still searching for today. I feel like over the years I've grown in discernment of those things and more conscious of those things, of real love and all that. So it's a process, man. And it's very hard at 18, 19 years old to figure that out. But that's why I love what I do right now with these kids. It's not just coaching, you know, basketball right now, but it's also coaching them in life and what I've gone through that, you know, these kids who want to pursue, you know, basketball after high school or any sport after high school or just anything, mm-hmm. you know, things that they are going to see in this world, you know, I can share my experiences with them and try to either encourage them to go the right way or prevent them from going the wrong way. So,
yeah. What's your position on this? Because, I was listening I was on Instagram and I forgot I think it was a college coach. I can't remember. But anyway, he was like, one thing that he was kind of frustrated or kind of had an issue with some of this generation that you're coaching is like, he was talking about, I'll tell you what he's talking about. He was talking about European over American.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how Americans, how we, and you know, how a lot of our high school players are, they play maybe five or six games on a weekend, and they might practice, if they practice, one time a week.
Right.
Where on a European, like, they practicing five, 6 days out of the week.
Yeah.
And they're playing one game that week. And so he was like, a lot of players, some of them, you know, he coached his son AAU team, and he was talking about how some of the players will quit because they like, well, y'all practice. I can go here and not practice.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I've been hearing like a lot of players and younger people in this generation where they are like privileged, where they just go play somewhere else and then that's where it makes the coach, and I'm not, and I know y'all not, I know you and DJ not like this, cause that's just not like, you know, that's, y'all not built like that.
Yeah.
Where you got some coaches that will give them, you know, let them, you know, you don't have to practice, or you know what I mean? Kind of give them, you know, kind of baby them, or kind of, you know, you know, not push them like the European coaches are, because like they might quit on them, or they might, you know, that you got 100,000-200,000 followers, so you got this popularity where it's like you pumped up where where nobody can coach you. So what's your position on that? Because like you're coaching that group now.
Yeah. So with the European versus American, I would, from my experience over in Europe and from my experience here playing basketball my whole life, in Europe is very more structural.
Okay.
As far as like teaching the fundamentals of the game. You know, it's very, you know, fundamentals as far as like passing and cutting and movement without the ball and setting screens and where to be on defense and all that. you know, I think here in America is more like almost like highlight driven.
Okay.
That's Everybody's cool. looking for the next highlight. Everybody can't wait to post their highlight tape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got people, you got people averaging like 3 points a game. highlight tape. Like, it don't make any sense. It's like, but you know, I think, you know, for a long time, Americans were like leading the way with basketball as far as like talent wise and just, you know, the popularity of the NBA and the college game and everything like that, where now as the rest of the world has kind of like caught up.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got great leagues that, you know, NBA is still top dog.
Yeah.
But you still got great leagues all over the world. Like, mm-hmm. EuroLeague basketball is highly competitive basketball. You're going to see great, you know, plays that are drawn up. You're going to see great competitiveness. You'll see players that even played in the NBA go over there and have great careers too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, and I feel like in America, especially with the AU circuit, we get so caught up on rankings and highlights and all this, you know, everybody's going crazy on three pointers and dunks and all that. All that stuff is great, but like, what's going to have more longevity, you know,
mm-hmm.
for your career? Not everybody can be Steph Curry, you know, not everybody can be LeBron. There's only one Steph Curry. There's only one LeBron James. Like, you need other guys who can fill the roster. Yeah. And those guys still have long, successful careers.
Yeah.
It's okay to be, who can I say? It's okay to be a Draymond Green.
Yeah.
You know? It's okay to be a like a Mario Chalmers for LeBron or somebody. You know? It's okay to be that. You know? Everybody has a role to play. And, you know, you should be striving to be the best person you can be. And you should also be realistic, you know?
you gotta be real.
If you 6'1" and all you watching is LeBron, like you need to reevaluate some things.
Yeah,
you know,
you
find somebody who fits your game. I know for me, you know, I'm 6'8", 6'9". You know, I can shoot, I can pass, I can dribble, I can post up, and I can play defense and rebound. So like, I can do a lot of things on the court.
Yeah.
A lot of guys that I would watch would be like Tracy McGrady, Kevin Durant. Those are some of the superstars I watch. But even like role players, like Tayshaun Prince was one of my favorite players of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's one of my favorite players of all time. And he has the same body type as me.
Yeah.
And he's left-handed like me.
Oh, so you like, left? I didn't know you were left-handed. Okay.
Yeah, I'm left-handed. So I would watch Tayshaun all the time.
Okay.
And to see like, if you know Tayshaun is all left. He'll never go right. He all left. So, and at that time in my life, like in high school, I was all left too. I didn't get the right hand until I got to college. but that's a guy that I would watch all the time, just seeing how he plays defense, see how he's you know, manipulating the game as far as getting to his spots and everything like that. So you got to find somebody to like kind of gravitate towards. You know, I love Carmelo. I love how physical he was.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take little things from him. Like if I get in the post, I'm gonna try to be physical like him.
Mm-hmm.
Or I love how KD had his little rock and pull shot like Tracy McGrady.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm gonna add that to my game. So just adding little pieces of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Even like Dwayne Wade was one of my favorite players, but I knew I can never be Dwayne Wade. I'm not that fast. And he's just a super athlete. I'm athletic, but I'm not that athletic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an acrobat in the air like that, but you know, but you just gotta be realistic. And I think you can't ever get away from the fundamentals. The fundamentals are the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone should be fundamentally sound, because at the end of the day, if you take everything away, do you still Are you still good off the ball? Mm-hmm. Are you still setting good screens? Are you still playing defense? Are you still communicating? Like, if you take all the talent that you have out, are you still going to do the fundamental things? And I think that's very important. And I think that's what kind of separates the Europeans from the Americans right now. They're so fundamentally sound that they don't have to be super uber talented to have an effect on the game. But they do have the uber talented though. You see Wembanyama, and you see like the Manu Ginobili's and the Tony Parker's and you see those guys come every now and then. But you also see guys like Patty Mills, and you see guys like Rudy Gobert and you know, other European guys, Lauri Markkanen. Like, those guys are like super fundamentally sound. So, and it's longevity. They have longevity in the game.
Oh, and you know, to kind of back up what you were saying too, where I was listening to watching JJ Redick, because I love basketball and just hearing different intelligent.
JJ has a great perspective of the guy.
Real good, man. So he had a Jamal Mashburn on. And he said, did you watch that? Or you just kind of seen that it was on there?
Yeah, so, I listened to that.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that was stood out, it aligns with what you're saying, is he was like, well, the Americans are very skilled because we work on like individual things. Right. But he also talked about, and it aligns with what you're saying, where how are you working on things when you don't have the ball? You talked about screening. You talk about communication. A lot of that is off the ball. You know what I mean? Like, you screen, you know, you don't have the ball when you're screening. You talk on offense, but you communicate on a lot on defense, and then you're talking when you don't have the ball. Like, hey, so it's different thing. So that stood out. That was like, man, I never thought about that. Yeah. Like, individually, where they might be very skilled, but as far as the fundamentals, as far as without the ball and team ball, is a different, you know, like, a lot of players may not have that because they're just training on their specific games.
For sure, man. And to your point, it's like, we are super skilled. Like, and these kids nowadays are super skilled. Like, some of the kids I have right now, like, I tell them all the time, like, the stuff you doing, like, I couldn't do at your age. Like, I couldn't do. But one thing I had advantage on, I knew the game. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew how to, you know, manipulate the game to my advantage, even without using my skill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using my brain.
Yeah.
My IQ. Like, little things, like, I'll talk about communication, but some of the communication I'm talking about as far as knowing is nonverbal.
Okay.
It's like eye contact or like a head nod.
Yeah,
or like,
yeah.
So it's things that I picked up on just playing with older guys, you know, and it's like, dang, what'd you just do right there? Oh, I just gave him a little head nod. Like, I looked away. Like, I'm using my eyes to manipulate the defender. It's like, bro, I never thought about that. So let me try to do that, you know, and it makes a difference.
Yeah.
It's like a split second. And that's all you need sometimes, you know. So it's just picking up on like those intangibles and things that can't really be taught, but they're taught through like the time you spend with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of kids don't spend enough time watching the game. We're so like, especially in this culture nowadays, we're so like we're a microwave culture.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we see all the highlights. We might see them on Instagram for like 30 seconds, but the full game. Like, when's the last time? I ask these kids all the time. When's the last time you watched a full game?
It's hard to watch a full game because it's not hot. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to say it's hard, but it's, your attention, our attention span, people's attention span, you don't watch a full game without doing something else. You're not just paying attention to the game.
Right. And I tell them, because, you know, and JJ Redick says this all the time. He calls himself a basketball sicko, right? And I kind of feel that way about myself too, because I will literally watch basketball all day. Like this month is probably my favorite month. Yeah. Like just watching all these conference tournaments, and then we got the NCAA tournament coming up. Like this is my favorite month for basketball. Like I will be locked in the house watching basketball all day. Those guys. So like, and it's all about, it's kind of like, what is your commitment level? You know, if you really love it and you really want to be, you really see yourself doing this your whole life or for the future, then how much time are you willing to spend with it? You know? And, you know, for me, you know, at one point I thought I was going to be playing my whole life, you know, and that stopped. But then I figured out my other passion was like to coach and to help the youth, you know, help someone's dream of getting there. And I still have that same fire and passion that I did as a player now that I'm a coach, you know? So I still spend the same amount of time and probably even more time watching the game and deciphering the game than I did as a player, you know?
I want to, you know, one of the things that like stood out is when you talk about, you know, you had that passion for the young people is I remember, was that in that was last summer. I don't know what month it was, but you were on a panel. When was that?
Last August.
Oh, that, okay. Okay. Last August you were on a panel. And, you know, we're talking to the, you know, in front of the church, man, which was a big platform. And it was a few other panelists that were talking about your, you know, your experiences and encouraging the young people. And then one of the things that, you know, when you got down and, you know, pastor said he had Pastor Cecil forced to pray and lay hands on you. And said you was gonna preach. Like, what did that? Like, did you know he was gonna do that? Like, how did you? Like, what was that moment like for you?
It's so crazy, man. Like, it's so, when I think about it, I kind of get goosebumps, because, you know, before then, I was at a real like difficult time in my life. Like going into that month,
okay,
I had just got out of a relationship, had to, like, it was just a lot of stuff going on. I had to break my lease, had to move back in for with my parents for a while, and I had been by myself since college, you know?
Yeah.
So that was different, and it was like a humbling experience that was going on. And, you know, before that month, I had been away from the church for maybe like 2-3 years.
Okay.
So, like, it was a lot of things going on in my midst of like all this turmoil that I was in. I kept hearing God telling me to go back to the church.
Okay.
And so the Sunday before the panel was my first time back at CTAB in almost 3 years.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I remember after the service was done, I saw Cecil. And it was almost like he was making a beeline straight towards me. And like, I'm almost by the front of the church, about to go into the parking lot and leave. Mm-hmm. But he's making a beeline towards me, like walking past people trying to get his attention. He's walking straight at me.
Yeah.
And he walks up to me. He's like, "Bro, I need you next week."
Oh, it was just a week notice?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's like, "I need you. There's a panel and I need you to talk." And without hesitation, I just said, "Let's do it." And I didn't even know what to expect or anything like that. I just said, "Let's do it." Cause it felt like I was being led, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember, so he had told me it was going to be next week, the next Sunday, but throughout that whole week, he hadn't like given me more information about it. So I remember that Saturday, the day before, he sends me like the criteria or the itinerary, like the questions that they were going to have, everything like that. And then you know, I remember him saying it was going to be a youth panel. So I'm thinking like, okay, we're going to be in the Family Life Center, you know, talking to the youth. I'm thinking we're talking to the youth ministry or everything like that. And I remember saying that, and he was like, oh no, this is in replacement of the sermon. This is a sermon. I'm like, what? Like, yeah. I'm like, you know, that's when everything started rushing in my head. I'm like, bro, I ain't been to church in 3 years. And first time I come back, I got to speak in front of everybody. Like, I look like a whole completely different person. Like when I was in the church last, I had hair. I don't got no hair no more. Like these people don't even know who I am. Like it's crazy. So like, that's when like, I really kind of had to calm myself down and I really had to just pray on it. And because if I would have like kept like overthinking it, I would have talked myself out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I really just prayed on it. And then I started to, you know, kind of study for it because I was looking at the questions and I spent the whole night just like kind of like getting my answers ready and everything like that. And then, you know, even the day of just driving into the church that day, I was nervous. I was just nervous. And I hadn't felt something like that in a long time.
Hey, I mean, you did a good job, man. You were genuine. Yeah. You were authentic. I mean, like, you could tell that you was, like, for real about it. You wasn't trying to put on or anything like that. Like, that was you did a good job.
Yeah, and that was my thing, too, because, like, I had a whole, like, I had the answers to the questions, like, that I had studied. I had the answers to them on my phone. But once I got up there, I barely looked at my phone because it was coming out naturally. And I felt like God was speaking through me, you know?
Yeah.
And he was allowing me to share my experiences. And, you know, I don't have to fake my experiences because I live them. Like I'm lying or I have to make up some glory or anything. No, this is my life. Like, and I can tell, only I can tell my story, you know? Yeah. And I felt so comfortable up there. And even while I was up there, I was getting more confident as it kept going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Pastor called me down and he laid hands on me and said, I have a calling to preach. It was so revealing to me.
Okay.
And it's something that I had never thought of before. And it felt like I literally felt like I found my purpose.
That's good.
And it was like a light switch went off when he said it, right when he said it. And I remember going home that day and I had like a moment to myself. And I literally just like broke down.
Okay.
I literally broke down and was like crying, just like thanking God that he gave me my purpose in the midst of my storm.
That's good.
He showed me what he called me to do in the midst of everything that was going on. And that's something that like I'm still get emotional about it, man. Because it's like it's amazing what God can do.
And I'm
so thankful and appreciative to Cecil for even just like that last Sunday. I tell you, man, he was just going straight at me like it was crazy. And I just thank him. I can't thank him enough for allowing me to do that because like that's something that I would have never did on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, sometimes all you need is a little push.
Yeah,
all you need is a little push sometimes. And so. You know, I've been meeting with Pastor Mormon, you know, 2-3 times a month.
Okay.
And we just sit in his office and he's been mentoring me. Mm-hmm. And Lo and Cecil have been mentoring me. And they, you know, Pastor Mormon, he told me to go to Bible school.
Okay. And okay.
So, you know, just recently, last week, I got accepted to Bible school.
Man, congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. So I started class in the fall in August. So I'm looking forward to it, man. It's a new thing. It's a new challenge. And sometimes I can overthink it too. Like, dang, this is so new. Like, I don't know what to expect. But I know one thing I know about myself is I don't back down from challenges.
Mm-hmm.
even, and that relates to my competitiveness with basketball. Like, I never back down to any type of challenge. Like, you know, I'm ready to go. I'll figure it out. Yeah. Like, I'll figure it out on the fly if I have to.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm going to give it my all and work hard at it. And it's just so good to feel like I'm really walking, like, the path that God has chosen for me.
That's good.
That's good, man. You know, I felt like, you know, I told myself, I'm going to play in the NBA. I'm going to play basketball until I'm gray in the face, you know. But, you know, I would have loved that, but that's not what was planned for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was planned for me is to stay around the youth, to you know, learn more about God and share it with other people. And even in that, God has still blessed me to be in positions where I can still do my dreams. This is not how I envisioned them to, you know, I thought I was playing, but now I'm coaching.
Yeah.
You know? So it's still like, that's how good God is, man. It's so amazing. It's like, he's still allowing me to do what I thought my plan was. It's just in a different capacity.
Yeah.
And it's still in alignment with his word and his will over my life. So it's just amazing, man. I've been in a great space since then. Like, that was a life-changing experience for me.
That's great, man. I'm happy for you, man. Like, and I'm, like I said, I'm really appreciative and grateful. We got another, you know, brother, a faithful brother that comes and is active in the ministry.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thankful for you guys as well, man. Cause like, I remember my first time coming to Transitions and seeing other men in there, and
mm-hmm.
you guys are not, you're not just in that back, just, you know, letting everybody else speak, but you guys mm-hmm. are active, yeah. you know, yeah. and that encouraged me to be active. You know, I started talking more and I started yeah. to engage more. And I think that's what we need, man. Like you said, it's a lot of women in the church, and we're grateful for that, but we need more men in the church as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we need to kind of like cultivate that and bring some more, you know, get some things going at the church, you know, whether it's, you know, men's ministry and everything like that. So, and I think, you know, Cecil and Lowe, they are, I'm so excited for them. And
yeah.
proud, because they are going to do fantastic things at that church.
Yeah. No, I'm excited about that too, man. Like they, yeah. you know, they're going to take it. You know, they're going to be used in the capacity, you know, like how Pierre says ministry look like you. It's going to be different than Pastor Mormon.
Yeah.
Not right. saying it's going to be better or worse or anything. It's going to be different. So right. I'm excited to see, you know, how God's going to use them and you know, the new things that's going to come with their yeah, leadership and their under their you know, being pastors.
Yeah, I'm super excited for them, and I'm ready to help them any way I can, man.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, because they're good people, man. And I'm gonna have them on here too.
For like sure.
they both agreed to be on.
Nice.
They good people. You want to run through the wall for a Cecil yeah. and Loretta, because you know that they will do it for you, and you know how right. much they put into it. So I told them the same thing. Like, it was interesting. The installation Sunday. So I'm yeah. praying. I'm praying that in the morning, and something said, like, you know, cause I always, you know, I told Cecil when I knew that they were gonna do it, like when they announced it last year or whenever they announced it, I'm like, hey, whatever y'all need, you know, I'm there. You know, I'm happy for y'all.
Right.
So then I'm praying that night, I mean that morning, and it had to be my Holy Spirit was like, hey, send them, you know, like encourage them. So I sent them Joshua 1.
Okay.
And it 9:8-9 or something like that. And that was one of the scriptures that, you know, talking about being strong and courageous. That was one of the, right. the passages that Dr. A.R. Bernard,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
talked about. So I'm like, you know, like I was being obedient. And yeah. it was kind of aligned, and then, you know, Cecil was like, you know, he you know, thanked me or whatever, you know, for the encouraging words. But it's just like, man, you a wanna run, you know, I don't mind doing whatever for them because they good people, And then they work hard too.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, they gonna do a great job, man. I'm excited for the future with them. So, yeah.
Hey, man. Hey, Jordan, man, this was good, man. I appreciate you coming on. This was, in my humble opinion, I had Jordan Nobles on today, man. Thanks again, Jordan, for coming on, man.
Man, I appreciate you so much, Chaz, and thank you for allowing me to be on your podcast, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, no problem, man. Like I said, I want, you know, get more brothers on, get your brother DJ on, get Cecil on here, get Loretta. You know, I just want to, you know, I want people to hear y'all your experiences and some of the knowledge and wisdom that y'all, you know, that you all went through. So
yeah, for sure. Any way we can help, man, I appreciate you.
Yeah. Hey, also, if you are interested, you know, I write books. You can go on to chazdouglas.com. I love to work with anybody that has a story and that wants to get their story mm-hmm. published and written. You go, that's Chaz Douglas, Douglas.com. I love to work with you. Hey, good again, Jordan, man. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Thank you.
Yep.